welcome back for a new episode of Design Cafe, where we like to have candid and deep conversations about UX design. We share about our thoughts and experience working as a designer in the tech industry. In this fourth season, we've decided to challenge ourselves by discussing some difficult taboo topics. So we'll cover things like mental health at work, dealing with toxic workplaces, and the challenges of career progression. Basically, topics that make you a bit uncomfortable to talk about, but are really important as they impact us all. I'm your co-host, Sandrine.
And I'm your co-host, Susan.
We intend to release a new episode every couple of weeks on a Friday. And in the meantime, if you'd like to hear a bit more about us, you can find us on Twitter at Design Cafe or on LinkedIn on Design Cafe. And we also have a website at designcafe.com. And if you'd like to support the podcast a little bit further, you can leave us a review on your podcast platform. And you can also buy us a coffee on buymeacoffee.com/designcafe. All right, so this week we've decided to talk about how we manage mediocrity standards at work. And they sometimes happen in the workplace, and that involves either ourselves or colleagues basically ending up doing an impactful work or kind of working in a non-design mature workplace as well, where designers are not always set up for success. So, Susan, maybe a good place to start could be, how would you define mediocre design work?
You've already defined parts of it, I think, when you talk about when you end up doing unimpactful work. I think ultimately mediocre design work happens when the work you do, the designs you create, doesn't have impact. It could be impact for end users. It could be impact for your organization and the business. It could be impact on the world when it doesn't have its intended impact or doesn't have a positive impact on a regular basis. That's mediocre design. Sometimes you design stuff and it doesn't have the intended impact, but that happens, and that's part of the design process when it's sort of like, not a one-off, but you know, you try something and it doesn't work, and then you try again, or you iterate, or you reflect on how it went. That's part of the design process. I wouldn't call that mediocre design work, but when you consistently don't have any impact with your work, I think that's quite, yeah, that's what I would call mediocre design work. The second thing is mediocrity. Is it mediocrity? Is that how you say it? Mediocrity. What a difficult word. It can be subjective. It's also about not meeting good enough standards in design, and then the question is who's setting the standards. So you could have mediocre standards in relation to your own standards. If you set design standards for yourself as a designer and you fail to meet them, it could be mediocre design for yourself. But then it could also be mediocre in relation to standards set by your manager, or standards set by your team, or standards set by your business as a design org, or standards set by the design industry. Maybe it's less about subjectivity and more around like which lens of standards do you look through. But yeah, those are the two main things I would say mediocre design is: not having impact over time consistently, and not meeting the different lenses of design standards set by various entities.
Yeah, I think you've defined it quite well. I definitely agree with the impact aspect. I think if you don't do very quality work, whether it's your own doing or just a consequence of your workplace, you definitely will be, definitely qualifies as mediocre work for me as well. I think I would also, I guess, build on the standard. I agree. I think all different workplaces will have a different view of what that standard is. But I do think we kind of have there's kind of a silent standard in our industry, I would say. And I think, like, if you don't have a high standard within your company, I think then you need to go and seek that standard outside, and kind of, you know, you can get that through mentors or just even following and looking at you know, how designers do things in design mature workplaces, and you can try to identify what a good standard is for design and try to strive for that. But yeah, for me, I think there's also a level of mediocrity when there's a lack of care, I guess, in details, and I guess in how the solution solves the problem. And, you know, sometimes you can see that there's additional steps that could have been removed, or there's just parts of the UI interaction is a bit clunky. And I don't know, I think that that level of polish as well is often what also makes you meet that standard quite often. So yeah, and you can see that sometimes when designers are rushed to delivery, when they're not given a lot of time, when design systems are not up to date, up to scratch, you know, it's not always a fault of the designer, obviously, when that happens. There's tons of reasons why, but I think that also sometimes really impacts the quality of the work.
Why do you think mediocre design happens? Have you observed or noticed that there are certain types of work environments or design teams or organizations that foster better quality design and other environments that don't, and you end up with mediocre design? Like, where does it come from?
Yeah, so I think there's two parts. I think it either comes from the workplace or it either comes from the individual. When it comes from the individual, obviously that needs to be treated on a case-by-case basis by the management team, and help that individual scale up their skills. So I won't talk for now too much about that one. But otherwise, often you would see workplaces not really setting up their designers for success. So, well, first of all, they won't have a standard because they don't know what design is. So by default, you can't really set a standard for something that you have no expertise in. And they will often have a misunderstanding of what design is. So they will think that design is just a visual. And also sometimes they don't even have strong visual skills to actually be able to tell what a strong UI looks like. So I think just that lack of understanding of what design is will often lead to designers not having the space to approach the problem space in the right way. And then there will be some predefined solutions being given to them. So therefore, they will be working on non-optimal solutions because, you know, it's a solution that they have not come up with themselves, but something that's been handed over to them to design. And by default, that means that that solution has probably not been thought through very well. And when that happens, often there's gaps in the flow, in the experience, in how the solution connects to other parts of the product. Just because a designer has not actually had that time to really like look holistically at the solution they're designing. Other times as well, I think there's just there's some places that also really want to launch at speed, and obviously speed is really important. But then you really need to be careful around what you launch should still be meeting kind of a set standard. So I think that's something that you need to discuss as your team as well, of like what is good enough. And, you know, sometimes it's discussing how can you be incremental and like build up over time. But at least what you start with should be well designed nonetheless. It's just you start smaller, and that's really how you should approach things. It's not about releasing something that is clunky, does not work well. And I think there's sometimes that frustrations from designers is that they get told that they will iterate on their work and that never happens. And we often end up with suboptimal features that feel only half done. So that's also, I think, a big issue that we have as an industry sometimes. And I've been sometimes guilty of that myself quite often. And sometimes I even kind of understand why product, for example, will not prioritize going back on the feature. Sometimes you need to move on to something else, and that's just the nature of the job. But having those conversations early on around what's good enough so that you make sure that whatever you release is meeting a set standards that, you know, you're comfortable keeping it on the product as it is if it was to stay like that for a long term.
I think what you're saying is making a very clear distinction between mediocre in the designer, the individual designer, and then mediocrity in the organization's design maturity. Because you can be a brilliant designer and brilliant individual designer and still deliver mediocre work because the organization isn't set up for mature design practices like you describe. And that can, I'm sure many of us have experienced that, where we're really frustrated that we feel like we can do so much better and the design can be so much better, but we're shipping things we're not happy with because we're pushed to ship at speed, or because the organization doesn't embrace things like doing usability testing or user research or accessibility, or, you know, all of these things, or haven't invested in a design system. And it goes to show that it's so important to continuously work to improve the design maturity in your workplace, and that a lot of impactful design, to me anyway, isn't just impact for the end user and impact for the business results, but also impact in the form of helping the organization mature. So you can start as a brilliant designer in a very low design mature organization, but if over time you can move the design maturity higher and higher up on the chart, that's very impactful as well. So you go from the organization delivering mediocre design to the organization delivering quality design. That's such tough work, and it requires so much influence and persistence and perseverance and all of those things over time. But I think on the whole, that level of design impact has a very big impact at the end of the day as well, because it helps the organization as a whole deliver non-mediocre design as well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree. I think it's an essential journey for many organizations to go through. But I think there's something, though, is that I think it's important to understand it's not something you can expect just from designers on the ground. I think it really takes a strong design leadership team to do that, and also a willingness from the business and other functions to also educate themselves and be open-minded about changing their own processes. I've seen some organizations really like struggling to make that change, and design leadership struggling to also take action. And the result of it is that it's almost the expectation is put on the shoulders of the designers on the ground to create the right environment for themselves. And I think sometimes it's incredibly unfair, because you have so much less influence and impact at your level when you're a mid-level designer, for example, than you are when you're obviously much higher up in the food chain. And whilst you can do your best to, you know, improve your collaboration with your product engineering functions, at some point your range of impact is only within that squad that you're working in. So if those other functions hear a very different speech and they have a very different set of goals on their side, it's going to be really, really hard for you to make them align with you at your level. And that's why I think it needs to be a high level function effort and not just put on the individual's shoulders as well. Because sometimes that's when it can really lead to burnout for some designers, where they really try and they try and they try, and they're trying to collaborate better, try to propose new ways of doing things, try to educate people on the value of the design process. And often what happens is that they just get a closed door in front of them, and it can be really painful over time. So I think there's a big work from the leadership team as well to help support and have a proper plan in place to be like, this is our plan to help the organization understand design better, etc.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. I agree. Do you then think that when individual designers aren't set up for success is it due to bad leadership? I'm putting that very bluntly, but is it?
I mean, you could put it that way. I guess it's quite a blunt way of saying it. And in some cases, yes, it might be true. Like, there's definitely some organization where there's just not very strong leadership in place. Maybe sometimes it's more due to inexperienced design leadership as opposed to bad design leadership. I think it's very hard to move an organization from being non-design mature to design mature, and each organization have their own set of challenges, and you know, they have their own culture and traditions, I guess. And even if you have been impactful in a previous role, it's not guaranteed that your recipe as a leader will work in that new organization as well. So I think sometimes there's probably some design leaders that have been very hopeful of making a change and then trying and actually realizing that it's not working in that new workplace. So maybe that's more as well a case of like experience and knowing how to mold your approach to different workplaces depending on what they are like, etc. So I think it's a really tricky one. But I do sometimes there is a bit of a lack of action and expecting the other functions to want to change for you as opposed to giving them a reason to change. And I think sometimes that's being a bit forgotten to remind other functions that actually you exist as a design function and that's your goal, that's your role in the organization as well, and keep banging about that role and being super clear about that. And then kind of over time give reasons to that other functions to change and mold their processes to make a place for your team as well. So it can be just trying to align interests and being like, well, you know, you have that objective. Actually, the design function can help you maximize impact on that. Or I don't know, like there's ways you can approach this. I don't know if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I think I do. It makes me also think about, and this can just be my own experience and maybe it's not relatable to other people, but it makes me think about how, for me, I've experienced that sometimes the design leadership in an organization has tried to work hard to go from less maturity to better maturity. And they've reached a level of better design maturity where the design leadership and the wider leadership is quite proud of the work they've done. But me as an individual designer, I'm still not proud. Like I still think it's mediocre. And how do I explain this? I think that happens to me personally. I'm just speaking from experience. That happens to me when there's a mismatch between my own standards for good design and the leadership's standards for good design. So in those instances, it could be that we've gone from doing zero usability testing to usability testing all the time. And design leadership says, oh, we are so design mature now because we do usability testing all the time. But from my perspective, if all we're doing is usability testing, we don't do any generative research or we don't do all these other things. Like there's a piece missing. And I feel discomfort in that we're patting ourselves on the back as a design organization that, oh, we've done it now. We've reached good design standards because we've reached this single standard that someone in leadership has decided is the standard for good design. And I struggle actually more with that because I feel like it's not a case of there's so much more we can do. It's a case of, is this the standard of good design in this organization? Is this what design leadership here says is good design, that we just do testing all the time, but no other research, or that we have a good design system, but we don't do any testing or any research or any content design, or, you know, like, is this it? This is still mediocre to me, you know what I mean? And in those cases, for me, it's a case of, right, I obviously don't fit into this design culture, or again, it comes back to what can I as an individual designer on the ground do? So there's a bit of, I don't know, maybe a bit of disappointment on my end of course it's subjective. Good design to everyone is different, even amongst designers. But there's this other meta level of frustration where I feel like, hang on, why are we patting ourselves on the back for reaching this level of standard when, to me, this is not it. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but I think I'm speaking from own experience and own frustration here.
Yeah, no, I see what you mean and what you're coming from. I think it might also be because you have so much more, direct knowledge of what's going on in the teams. Sometimes leadership is quite far removed from all the decisions that are being made. So sometimes they don't see, like, some things that you do see that are not up to standards. So there might be also a bit of that where sometimes clearly, I don't know, a suboptimal choice for the user was made. And maybe leadership did not hear about that, but you see it on a regular basis because it happens in your team's decision in an ongoing way. Or like, for example, I have seen sometimes teams being really proud of, you know, the quality of design that they put out there. And sometimes like, and I think it's fair to be proud of how far you've come from, you know, but they're proud of that, but yet they still don't really have a seat at the table. And I see many designers not being included in roadmap planning and that sort of thing. And that's when for me, that's where I cringe a bit. Where I'm like, well, hold on, like, we still don't have a say. We still don't have a strategic input like we should. So it's great that like we have experience principles and all that, but we're still far from actually being able to apply them. So it's like these kind of things where I'm like, okay, we're not there yet. I think another one is maybe actually having a conversation about the standard as a team. And, you know, you will probably have a standard from more of a problem analysis perspective, problem definition, research. And maybe one of your colleagues will have more one around interaction, visual motion design. And, you know, because we all come from different strengths and perspectives. And if you put it all that together, then you can really start defining, okay, this is what good design looks like to us. And you can start working towards that as a unit. So it's not, at least there's a collective picture of what good looks like for your team. And I think that helps quite a lot. So yeah, have you ever seen actually any team doing that kind of work of trying to define what's a good standard?
Yeah. I think about this a lot because I've been in a few teams that's done that very well. One recently, we would very regularly, almost I think once a month, we would have design team, or we called ourselves the product team, but we were all designers in the product team. There were no product people, as in there were no product managers in the product team. Anyway, the product team would come together once a month roughly and do departmental retros. And as part of those, of course, we would do retrospectives on like the ways of working and stuff, but also on our values and principles. And it's a lot of the value out of those retros came out of the quality of the conversations and discussions we had, and it's really helped unearth our differences but also similarities and common ground as designers. A lot of our differences came from the diversity of our backgrounds. Like, some of us had only worked in certain types of companies, others had worked in other types of companies, we also had vast differences in age. So that was quite interesting, because when you started out as a web designer in, you know, 90s something, you bring a very different perspective in other ways compared to someone who's a lot more fresh and also then can bring in other types of values and perspectives that are useful. So through those retros and through those discussions, we really reached over time a very strong common ground on what good looks like on our departmental product design level. And in that case, I didn't feel this frustration that I described earlier, where I felt like, oh, there's a standard for design set by leadership that mismatches with mine, because as a design team, we continuously did that work over time to have a holistic view of what good design looked like. And I think what was very key in that experience is that the leadership had the humility to be open-minded and accept that even though they had a long career as a designer, they didn't know everything, and they weren't they did not have the complete authority on deciding subjectively to them what good design was for. That the reason they hired all of us was because they needed our input and because we knew things and had perspectives that design leader didn't have. And I think that humility and open-mindedness and willingness to understand that they have weaknesses or blind spots maybe as well is really important in reaching that common ground and shared understanding of what good design for the whole team looks like. So yeah, that's, I think, I mean, we talk about retros a lot, and they don't have to be retros. I think it's more the importance of continuously over time have these discussions and reflections in some way. I think some design teams try to get there, but it's usually, not usually, but it's often like a one-off, like, oh, let's do a strategy day or design principles day or whatever, and it's a one-off. But I think the regularity and frequency of constantly having those conversations is very, very important.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think design retrospectives, like for your design function, are really essential. In my current role, actually, they are organized on a regular basis. And I think it's one of the first workplaces where I've had this happening. And I think it makes a huge difference just because it brings the team together and you can talk about function level issues that you're facing. And often you see the same problems coming back, obviously, which shows and tells leadership, like, you know, where are the points of frictions for designers, and they can really put a long-term plan of action towards them. And it's a place for them to listen to us. And I think it's really, really essential. When these retrospectives don't happen, actually, for me, it tells me that there's no communication within the team and there's no loop between, you know, the ground designers and leadership and managers, and that's a problem, because if you only try to rely on like individuals bring issues to managers, which then need to bring it back to director, like, it's a really long scale to go up, and sometimes, you know, a manager may not think that an issue is important when actually 10 other designers in the team also experience it. And it's like, yeah, I think at least when you have that retrospective, you can bring up issues and you can talk about what really impacts the work, the quality of it, but also the quality of the mental of the team. You know, like, sometimes there are things that are difficult to work through. And yeah, I think they're just super, super important. If your team doesn't do retrospective, then I would suggest that you suggest it as a team exercise. And they don't have to be every 2 weeks like the sprint agile methodology. They should not be every 2 weeks for your design team. They can be once a quarter. It's already plenty to like bring up issues regularly. So yeah.
Yeah, yeah, completely agree. And that product team that where I just spoke about, we did them about once a month, which was often, but we were so small and tight knit that it didn't take a lot of effort. So it really depends. If you're a design team with, you know, 20 people, then of course maybe a bit more seldom is helpful. When you describe how, you know, sometimes individual designers need to bring issues to the manager and the manager needs to bring it higher up, and, you know, that's not particularly effective sometimes, that resonates so well with me. It makes me wonder if a mediocre design can sometimes come from, in addition to non-mature design organizations, design mediocrity also comes from lack of experience in the design leadership. And it makes me think about how I often observe that inexperienced design leaders, sometimes in interest of trying to be a shit umbrella for their team. So the shit umbrella is, you know, when a design leader sort of tries to shield their team from all the like politics, and crap, and, you know, all the noise that happens on a business organizational higher up level. They try to shield their team from that so that the team, individual designers, can focus on doing design work. I really, really appreciate that. But sometimes I experience that inexperienced leaders try to do that, but what they do instead is actually filter out too much and sometimes deprive individual designers from that seat at the table, which they can often have. So when you talked earlier about how designers don't get to input into strategic decisions and things, very often that's because there are issues with the organizational structure, that the organization doesn't respect and or understand design. Maybe they respect design but don't understand it, and that and so forth. But sometimes I think it's inexperienced design leaders taking on too much of those seats at the table in interest of protecting their individual designers. And that's really unfortunate, because it means that all the decision making that impacts the way the individual designers get to do their work, it happens in a room where those individual designers are not present. And I wonder if it sometimes has to do with trusting and empowering those individual designers with those decisions and bringing them into those strategic decisions. And that trust needs to come from, well, higher up, but also the manager or the design leader.
So I was wondering, because I guess if you talk about avoiding being mediocre at your job, it means that you will try to put extra care and strive for constant growth and always try to better your work, right? So I was wondering, if you want to at all costs avoid mediocrity, does that mean that you absolutely must be a high achiever in or a high performer at all times?
No, absolutely not. We talked about this in our last episode. I don't think being a good designer means you have to work, you know, 13 hours a day and do lots of reading on the side and your personal time and go to events and network all the time and all of that stuff. And in addition to delivering 110% at work, I think to be a good designer, it's more around the quality of your thinking. It's a quality of your quality of thought, the quality of your communication, and of course, everything else we've talked about, like the design maturity in organization, the quality of your leadership, and the power and influence those leaders have of influencing upwards, etc. I think it's important to think about that, to bear in mind that you can be a fantastic designer and still work normal hours and still have your lunch break and still take breaks. So many of the best designers I've worked with and interacted with are the types of designers where if I reach out to them for help, they just have a look at my work for maybe 10 seconds and then they say something or they give feedback that is so brilliant. And that's not them being high achievers, it's them having lots of experience or taking lots of time honing their craft and honing the quality of their thinking and their approach to design, that they build up this level of intuition and design standard within themselves to reach that point. So yeah, it's an easy one for me. I don't think you have to like hustle really, really hard to be a better designer than a mediocre designer. And some of the most mediocre designers I've observed work freaking hard. They work so hard. And
they can do, yeah.
And I think there's something in that as well. Perhaps if you know you can do better, you really do have to work very hard. And that's also what I did earlier in my career. I'm not saying you need to hustle to become a better designer, but when I lacked the experience, I did work a lot harder than I need to do now. All this to say that to become a better designer, maybe often over time, you do end up just building that wealth of knowledge and experience that you don't have to hustle all the time. And maybe that's one of the standards you can set for yourself as well. Like, how hard do I have to think and work to reach a good level of design? Like, if I have to work so hard every single time to reach a level I'm happy with, maybe there's maybe an OKR here, or whatever we may call it, is to reduce the level of effort to reach a good design.
I'm going to ask a bit of a controversial question, but do you think that years of experience and skills and I guess quality of work are correlated? And I'm asking this because I've seen some really dedicated junior designers doing really interesting thinking and delivering really interesting work, like with actually quite high levels of polish sometimes. And then I have seen some people called the veterans of the industry, kind of sometimes under delivering, I would say, on the quality and not meeting a standard. So I was wondering, do you think they're always correlated?
No, absolutely not. I think what you bring as a very strong, more inexperienced designer is a different lens through things and different references, contextual references, cultural references, perhaps, because you brought up in a different age. I'm taking this to extreme, but like a 20-year-old designer and a 50-year-old designer, like grown up with different references. So for me, it's more around the quality of diversity, which I also talked about earlier in that product team where we continuously have retros. There's such a big age span between us and the younger designers and the older designers weren't bringing different levels of design quality. We were bringing diverse levels of insight and values and principles and contextual contexts and references and things like that. So yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's, you know, you're automatically a better designer because you have more years of experience. I think maybe what I was trying to explain earlier is that with years of experience, you build a sharpness of intuition sometimes. So if you're already a strong designer, if you're already a strong designer at 20 years old, for example, or with 1 year of experience, and then you gain 10 years of experience, maybe by the time of 10 years of experience, you make those snap design instinctual decisions a lot more easily.
Well, I mean, I was wondering actually, because that's also something I'm conscious of as I grow older and grow my career. It's, you know, there's a constant change in our industry and constant new trends. And, you know, the roles, as you said, like what design was 20 years ago is quite different from what it is today. And sometimes I'm wondering, you know, does the fatigue build up as well over the years of like constantly having to renew yourself? And I guess maybe it's very based on the individual and what their priorities are. And, you know, I think some people will be excited to reinvent themselves in their role on a regular basis. And maybe some other people will be like just a bit sick of it over the years as well. And in a way, I think that's all right. But then my fear is that we tend to not look at these people positively sometimes. And I'm actually wondering sometimes if we've got something wrong there. I guess over the years, like the design industry change, and if you don't get up to speed with the change, then, you know, at some point, eventually, you're not going to have the impact in your work that you used to have because you're not, the standard has changed, let's say.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. I feel and fear that sometimes we get a bit hung up with what's fresh and new and we forget about the wealth of experience some of the long-timers have in the industry. And just because, again, I'm biased now because I'm working on a very quite complex piece of information architecture. And I haven't worked... I mean, I've done IA stuff recently, but not to this level for many years. And it makes me think about how back in the day when I first learned UX over a decade ago, information architecture was such a huge discipline.
It was. Yeah.
And there's so much in it that I feel like has been diluted over time. And now information architecture is sort of reduced to navigation and sitemaps. Which I think is very unfortunate. So I'm just using information architecture, IA, as an example. Because
it's a good one, though, yeah.
I feel like a lot of these, let's call them veterans, or people who've been in the industry for much longer than a lot of us, they have that skill and experience. And maybe some of the, I don't know where I am. I'm sort of mid-career, I suppose. I'm neither a veteran, nor am I a young junior anymore. But I fear that some of the less experienced designers don't have the same level of awareness and sometimes maybe don't have the same level of respect for some of the core craft that some of the more experienced designers have. And I worry that as an industry, we are so eager to embrace everything that's new and fresh. And a few years ago, I noticed that I got really frustrated with all this hype around design tools and Figma. Don't get me wrong, I love Figma, but Figma is just a tool. And I noticed this disproportionate effort put into learning about Figma, learning how to use Figma at the expense of learning things like information architecture and all of these things. And I don't know, there's this shift towards, yeah, just embracing all these new fancy things, and don't get me started on ChatGPT. But you know, like what about, and maybe I sound like a grumpy old cat now, but I'm like, what about the craft? What about the craft?
I guess it's just going back to the core values, right? IA's like core principle is to help people find information in the most efficient way. And Figma is just a tool to help you achieve that at some point in your process. I think for me, this is a junior mistake anyway, to focus on the tool. And I know that right now there's a lot about ChatGPT, Figma and all of that, but I feel like there was already that hype before before it was Illustrator and Photoshop and all that. I feel like there's always been a thing about, should you learn the tool or should you learn the process? And sometimes I've had juniors for mentoring coming to me actually asking me, what tool do I need to learn? And it's actually, hold on, you will learn the tool when you get the job. But to get the job, you need to get the way of thinking. And that's that way of thinking that will get you a good job, at least, because I do think you could get hired just because you know how to use, some companies look for, we call them wireframe monkeys. And I guess those jobs exist somewhere, but you should definitely try to stay away from those jobs because you won't learn the right way to design there. So I feel like that's always kind of existed in a way. But yeah, I like what you're saying though about like each like fundamental pillars of design in a way sometimes get forgotten, but they're really important. And sometimes we forget of how essential they are. So I was wondering, like we've talked quite a bit about mediocrity from an individual perspective and also about from an organization perspective. So I guess, is this the individual being mediocre or is this the organization not creating the right environment? How do you make the difference between whether mediocrity comes from, I guess, the person not having the right skills and therefore how you should support that person, or whether it comes from the environment, or if it actually comes from maybe the person as well, sometimes being just not in the right mental state for work? And sometimes that happens where people just need a break as well.
I think there's a huge difference between an individual being a mediocre designer and an individual designer's work not being up to scratch right now, but they have the aptitude and the potential to grow. That second type of designer whose work maybe isn't up to scratch, but they have the aptitude, I would definitely not call that a mediocre designer, and I wouldn't call their work, design work, mediocre. I think that's a huge yes. difference. In the latter case, it's hugely important that that designer works with their manager and works with themselves to identify their gaps and opportunities in growth. A lot of companies I notice now are focusing on not just hiring by experience and skills and a great design portfolio, et cetera, but also hiring on aptitude and potential and motivation, which I think is great because it's really hard to assess in an interview process to see if someone whose work right now maybe isn't as great, but they have the potential to be better. And secondly, of course, by focusing on aptitude and potential, it really helps mitigate mediocrity in design over time. So yeah, I would clearly differentiate between those two. I think a mediocre designer is someone who doesn't have the aptitude and the potential and who regularly, consistently, over time, delivers subpar work.
Yeah, and I would just add to that as well. I guess you have to refer back to their level as well, right? Like, as you said, like someone showing potential in a junior role, like, you know, that it's quite different from someone who's at senior level and is not delivering quality work over time. And I agree that time as well is essential to look at as well. Is it a long time frame or is it just a bad quarter? Because it can also happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And that time frame is really important to think about, because is it true mediocrity or is it situational mediocrity? And situational mediocrity could be that an individual designer delivers mediocre design right now, because of a situation, which could be that they're burnt out or they have things happening in their personal life that distracts them and they need a break, and so on. So again, that's very different as well. And yes, in those cases, it's really important to identify what is going on and what that designer needs in order to maybe rest or reflect or take a break or recover and get back on the horse. I feel like that's a very cheesy thing to say. Get back on the horse when it feels right for them and when they've given it a bit of time. So all this to say, you're allowed to deliver subpar work and still not need to think of yourself as a mediocre designer. We're all like, none of us deliver amazing design work all the time. Sometimes it's because we still have growth and we still have skills and experience to acquire. Sometimes it's because we're burnt out, and sometimes it's all these other reasons we talked about. So yeah, I don't want anyone to go away and feel like, oh no, I'm a mediocre designer because I don't deliver 110% every time.
All right, so I think that's it for today. I think we've talked at length on how we can manage mediocrity and, I guess, low standards at work. As usual, you can find us on designcafe.com. If you'd like to hear a bit more about the podcast, you can also find us on Twitter at designcafe. If you would like to tell us how we're doing, you can leave us a rating on your podcast platform. For people who are listening to us on Spotify, we also have a little Q&A to hear your thoughts on the episode. So feel free to leave an answer on there too. It's always helpful for us. We will be back in 2 weeks, as usual, on Friday. And see you soon.